everybody. Welcome to the NFL Roadshow. Talking wideouts today with James Jones. We're also talking about a tight end as well, and I can bet that you can guess which one. But before we get to my former NFL Network colleague, who has some interesting opinions about this year's draft class, including one of his top five wideouts that I do not think you will find in any other top fives, I want to hit real quick on some of the biggest news of the week, including a bit of a power struggle between the NFL Players Association and the NFL itself that is centered around off-season workouts that have long been labeled voluntary, but have absolutely not in the past been voluntary for the majority of players on the team. It's like your boss setting up a meeting that you're not going to get paid for, so they can't really make you come. But, you know, if you don't come, you'll be punished in some other way, so it's not really worth it to fight the fight. But in this case, it's even more than that because of the competition aspect of the job itself in the NFL, and that's competition with the other teams in the league. If they're using their time to get better, will you fall behind and be less competitive if you do not? And it's also competition for your position because most people in the league, I think it's fair to say most, aren't totally secure in their positions. Like, whatever you do, it doesn't matter. You're our starter. I think most people have someone, likely younger, breathing down their neck, trying to take their job. So if you don't go to the voluntary workout, it just gives that person a better chance to do it, which is why I'm not sure how I see this boycott, quote unquote, of voluntary workouts going. It's what the NFLPA is advising players to do in the interest of safety related to the threat of COVID and the unnecessary risk of gathering as a team at this time. And we've seen a few teams announce that they will be following that advice and staying away. The Broncos did it first, then the Seahawks, Bucks, Lions, Patriots, Bears, Giants, and Browns all jumped on board. A little bit surprised about the Bucks and Patriots because of the Brady and Belichick no days off kind of cultures that we've seen there. Like, COVID be damned, I'm working out in a public park last offseason, but this season, not gonna, okay, whatever. The thing I think will be interesting here is what happens after the rookies show up, because after the draft, the rookies are going to show up, right? I mean, undrafted rookies definitely will. And the majority of drafted rookies, I think, are gonna feel pretty obligated to get on the field and start making an impression. And then, once those rookies do get on the field, and maybe they're looking good, in the case of some of them, what is the veteran at that person's position supposed to do? Are they supposed to then stay away, even if he's just handing that rookie more of a chance to take his job? I'm not saying that they shouldn't stay away. You know, they feel that this is a fight worth fighting. What I'm saying is that it also has to be practical for the people fighting to do that, because the window of time where they can make money is not particularly long, which is why they say NFL stands for not for long. So I personally am not convinced that this is done, that it's going to play out the way that everyone's saying it's going to play out right now. I think that I could see the players trying to get something from the league, you know, in a negotiation here that chips away at the stuff about the offseason that they don't like, but doesn't require them to actually go through with this. Just throw us any kind of a bone so we can get back out there. I could totally be wrong, though. Also interesting this week, a few signings. Cordell Patterson to the Falcons, Aldon Smith to the Seahawks, and most notably, Jadeveon Clowney to the Browns to put on the opposite side of Myles Garrett. Those two coming off the edge, yes, please. And I know that this isn't the same Clowney that went first overall in 2014, and I know that he's had a hard time staying on the field. We've dealt with a ton of injuries. And I know that his sack numbers haven't been impressive in the last few years. And I am not trying to make excuses, but I'm going to make excuses. He is still getting pressures. He is disrupting plays. And he is double-teamed a lot. I couldn't find a specific percentage for 2020, but I did find an old Seth Walder tweet from ESPN from last offseason that said that in 2018 and 2019, Clowney was double-teamed at a higher rate, 30%, than any other edge rusher in the league. So, put him on a team with Myles Garrett, and that is not possible anymore. And at the very least, it puts the defense in a position to have to make some decisions, right? So I'm not saying that Clowney's going to lead the league in sacks. All of a sudden, that's going to turn around. I am, however, saying that he might help Myles Garrett do that. And even if that doesn't happen, I think the number of edge rushers that you're adding to that line, remember they also signed Tack McKinley this offseason. So, and I realize that that's a flyer, but we're talking about depth here. I think all of this makes the Browns defensive line better. And at $8 million, which is what they're paying Clowney, he has the capability of earning up to $10 million, but we're looking at $8 million base. If he's going to be a bust, like some of you on Twitter have reached out to me and said he's going to be a bust. Okay, if he's a bust, they're paying him $8 million. And I think you got to like that cost-benefit ratio because that makes him the 31st highest paid edge rusher. And I think that's worth the upside. And if it doesn't work out, 1 year and it's over. Which brings me to the next layer here, which is the draft, because I think a lot of us thought that the Browns might draft an edge rusher in the first, and they still could. This is not a team with a ton of holes to fill that they're desperate about. So they could still go edge. I tend to think that they won't, though, just because of the timing of this signing. If they were thinking that that was what they wanted to do with their late first-round pick, why wouldn't they just hold off on Clowney until after the draft, like it sounds like teams are doing with Richard Sherman? It feels like they might be planning on going in a different direction and went ahead and grabbed their guy to rush the passer here. Maybe we see them go corner or defensive tackle or wide receiver. I don't know that I see that on day one so much, but maybe like a Christian Barmore type or Samuel Jr. or Newsom at corner. I don't think Horn will be there at 26, but who knows? I do think it makes a little bit more sense to wait on the wideout. But if they don't, we do have some guys that we're going to talk about in this episode that they could target. James Jones, 9-year NFL veteran wideout from the Packers and Raiders, also current NFL Network analyst, one of my favorites to work with, in that he just makes you smile. Like, you can't not smile when you are around James Jones. He's just chill and happy, always smiling, lightens the room, which I need sometimes because I'm not always like that. I tend to get in my head a little bit, overthink things, and he's hard to do that around. So I'm excited to hear from him about the draft, about the Packers, about game show host Aaron Rodgers. So let's go ahead and break the huddle. JJ, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. I'm living the dream over here in Arizona. We got some good weather, so I'm just hanging. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm excited about the draft and kind of making my way through all the position groups. You know how I can get? I'm like deep in the weeds and super nerdy about all this.
There we go.
And yeah. And I want to talk to you about all things related to that in just a second. But first things first, have you been watching your boy on Jeopardy?
I caught a little bit of it. You know what I mean? I've given him a hard time about it, but he's doing well, though. But I've caught some little bits and pieces of it. I haven't sat down on the couch and had me a little glass of wine or something and said, let me watch Aaron, you know, the full time. But I caught little pieces of it. He loves it. He's enjoying it. So it's fun to just see him on there and have some fun, you know, doing the TV stuff.
What are you giving him a hard time about? He's doing great, JJ.
Well, he is doing great, but you know, it's just all the little inside jokes and all that, you know what I mean? That you want to give him, you know what I mean? Have a little bit more swag and all that type stuff, man.
You know? How would you like to see him have more swag? What would that look like for Aaron Rodgers on Jeopardy of all things?
On Jeopardy of all things, but you know, maybe a couple more jokes, maybe throw some of that stuff out there, you know, mess with the contestants a little bit, you know what I mean? You're a Super Bowl winning quarterback, everybody loves you, you're Aaron Rodgers, you know what I mean? Let them see your personality, throw a couple jokes at him. He knows I was always a jokester, so I'm always like, man, mess with the contestants a little bit.
So you know his personality. When you've seen what you've seen, does he look nervous to you? Do you think he is? Because this is a totally different thing, right? Like we're used to seeing Aaron Rodgers under center. He's like calm as, you know, like disconcertingly calm at all times. Yeah. But doing Jeopardy and knowing, because he's been so vocal about this, that he really wants the job. Mm-hmm. Do you see anything there that says like, oh, man, he's kind of nervous here? I can tell.
You know what? I don't. I feel like he's comfortable. I feel like he's watched the show enough. I feel like he's been on the show. I think he knows how it's supposed to work. And to me, just watching him, I think he's comfortable. He's doing it, you know, off of what he's seen, you know, the people do it. So, you know, it's fun to watch him, but I don't think he's nervous at all. You know, I think as he continues to do it though, I think you'll see a little bit more of his personality every single time. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I don't think he's nervous. Now, it's not like he's about to throw the ball. He's not that confident yet. You know what I mean? But I don't see him being nervous.
It's funny because when they announced all the guest hosts, I was like, oh, Aaron Rodgers is going to be great. Because yeah. I feel like a lot of the other host type people, mm-hmm. like television people who they're plugging in there, they're used to hosting and it'll feel similar enough to what Alex Trebek did, but different because it's not Alex. Like mm-hmm. Aaron is so different that he can get out there and he's obviously, we all know, just like reeking of confidence.
Yeah.
So he can get out there and not do an Alex Trebek impression, mm-hmm. but also stay close enough to the show because he loves it, that it feels respectful and familiar. So I thought it was going to be great. And yeah. I think he's been great. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's been great. And I think it's just good, too, because, you know, he's an NFL star coming to the TV. So he doesn't have to be like Alex. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All he has to go out there is be like Aaron because, you know, really nobody knows what to expect. You know what I mean? So whatever Aaron gives you, you know, it's a bonus on top. So I truly believe he loves it, man. Like I said, you're going to see more of his personality as the show goes on, you know, the more he does. But I'm excited for him. I'm happy for him getting out there.
Was that something that you knew he was into? Like, is that something everyone that's close with Aaron knows? Is Aaron's like a Jeopardy nerd and watches the show? Or
he always used to talk about it. He always used to talk about it. And it's crazy because when he first started talking about it, it was like, you know, I was like, dang, you know, I mean, he is a super smart dude. You know, then when he started, I'm like, I could have guessed he would have been into that Jeopardy stuff, you know what I mean? You know, because he's extremely smart. So I'm not surprised when he started talking about in the locker room Jeopardy and all this type of stuff. I'm like, I knew he was into that smart stuff, man. So it's good to see him get his shot and go out there and have some fun with it.
That's smart stuff. So I've got some Packers draft questions for you, but I want to start more generally talking about the wide receivers. I have seen your rankings. And I have noticed, James, two different number ones. Mm-hmm. Okay. Devontae Smith, you called him your favorite wide receiver in the draft class in your 10 wide receivers to target this offseason column back in March before free agency. But then you had Jalen Waddle as your number one wideout more recently. What happened to change your mind?
Lindsay, you know me very well. So I went back and I'm watching film. And it's crazy because I was actually watching the film with my son, my oldest son. And, you know, he thinks he's a pretty good football player. I ain't told him he's good yet, but he's all right. But I was watching it with him and I always try to, like, you know, explain stuff to him and, you know, be able to break stuff down to him when it comes to like receiver player, any good player, because he plays running back, receiver and corner right now. So we watched Devontae Smith. We got a chance to watch Waddle. And as I was watching Waddle, I'm like, son, he has stuff that you wake up out of the bed with. He has stuff that you cannot coach. You cannot teach. You're not going to get to the NFL and everybody's going to be like, hey, the coach taught Waddle this. No. You know what I mean? Now, it's stuff that the coaches, you know, can get out of Smith and be able to teach Devontae Smith. But Waddle just has that it factor of stuff you cannot teach. And when you talk about that, you're talking about the releases off the line of scrimmage. You talk about 0 to 100 real quick. Like, this is a guy that could catch a 2-yard pass and take it 80. This is a guy that can beat you on double moves with his sudden change of direction and get down the field. He's a special football player. And when I got to watch it, I'm like, he's more explosive than Smith. You know what I mean? And he gives you that more of a home run hitter, and you can move him all over the field. And I'm talking about, like, he's a Swiss Army knife. He reminds me of a more explosive Randall Cobb. Like, we put Randall in the backfield. We put Randall in the slot. We put Randall in the outside. And Randall was one of those guys that could take that 5-yard catch, could take that run, that reverse, the fly sweep, and go 80. And you could do so many different things with him. So, like I said, he just has that stuff you cannot teach. He has that it factor, and that is why my heart has been changed, and he is my favorite.
You brought up Randall Cobb. You just saw Randall Cobb.
Yes.
I saw you post the picture of you and Randall and Jordy and Devontae.
Devontae, yeah, yeah. We all went out to wine country, out to Napa, had a little receivers reunion out there, just cracking some jokes, old memories, good times, you know. And, you know, Jordy had us at 77 different wineries. We drunk a bunch of wine. And
why? Is he like the wine guy?
He is. And it's crazy because I played with him for so long and, you know, he'll come over and have a glass of wine, but I didn't know he was into the wine like that. But yeah, he got 5 or 6 memberships down there in Napa and all that. He's taking us around and all that. He had us going through the back doors and all this stuff. I'm like, Jordy, who are you?
The back doors in Napa. Like it's like a Sunset Strip club or something.
How do you have all this pub, Jordy? Who are you, man?
Is he going to give Will Blackman a run for his money?
Oh, he definitely can. He definitely can. Now, I don't know if he's going to start a podcast and all that like Will, but he's definitely into his wines. He was, you know, he was walking us through the winery. He knew more than the guys taking us on the tours. I'm like,
are you a wine guy, JJ?
I drink a little bit of wine. I'm not a wine guy like Jordy, you know, but as I was out there, Jordy had me trying so much stuff. You know what I mean? I thought I knew about wines, but I don't know about wines. And then I got back home and I got about 77 bottles of wine at my front door.
I want to come to your house.
Yeah, we done bought all this wine. But it was fun, though, man. Get to talk to Devontae, Randall. Obviously, those guys are still playing, so they was getting stuff off their chest. You know, me and Jordy are done, so we're like, hey, y'all, welcome to come into retirement anytime. You know, so it was good times.
Are any of them not wine guys?
No, all of us are in the wine a little bit. Okay. So we all had a good time.
Like, can you taste notes of things in
your wine?
What?
You
or
know
do you
what?
Just are like, this one's good, this one's not?
Before I went to Napa, I was like, this tastes good, this does not taste good.
Totally.
I don't like this. But it's crazy because, you know, and we were cracking a bunch of jokes, but when we were there, the people there were, and Jordy's there, he's like, yeah, you could taste the chocolate and the little cinnamon and all this in there. And as I'm drinking, I'm like, I sure can taste the chocolate. So it's crazy because as they started talking about it and all that, I'm like, man, it's crazy how I could taste some of this stuff. So I'm like, man, I'm going to go back home. I'm going to have a totally different outlook on drinking wines and all. I'm going to be looking for certain taste and all that. But
you're going to be that guy at dinner. You're like, oh, the legs on this wine.
You know, so it was good, though. It was fun.
All right, so that was an aside. getting back to this year's wide receiver class. Okay, so Jalen Waddle, your new number one. Jamar Chase. Is your two? Chase. He also?
Yes. Jamar Chase is my two, and Jamar Chase reminds me of Keenan Allen.
Oh.
You know, I always try to put these guys in a boat of who I think they remind me of, you know, because so as I'm watching film, I could be like, okay, I done seen 5 plays of him, and he's looking like Keenan Allen, but then the next 10, I could be like, no, he's not looking like Keenan Allen. But the more and more I watch Jamar Chase, I'm like, this dude has Keenan Allen written all over him. You know, like, and as a receiver, one of the biggest things you want as a receiver, like, is body control. You know what I mean? No matter where the ball is, you're able to adjust your body and go get the ball. You know, if people is banging on you as you're going across the middle and all that, you have body control to be able to go up and make these plays. And as I was watching Jamar Chase, his body control is unbelievable. Like, you could teach a receiver how to get in and out of his break if you're with the right coach and be able to run good routes, but it's very, very hard to teach a guy body control, you know, and he has unbelievable body control. You see him fighting for balls on the outside. You see the DB panicking and he's just like cruising down there like, I'm finna go attack the ball and get it. He has unbelievable body control, and his feet off the line of scrimmage is Keenan Allen, Amari Cooper, Devontae Adams. He has those type of releases. Even his old teammate, because his old teammate Justin Jefferson has the same thing. You know, the releases off the line of scrimmage. Not too many receivers in the National Football League have that. So he's my number two strictly because of his body control and being able to be cool and calm when people are pulling all on him and still being able to go make the plays.
So let me ask you this. Jamar Chase, like Keenan Allen is a wide receiver you could plug into any offense, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
When you comp Jalen Waddle to Randall Cobb,
yeah.
are there offenses you don't want him to go to? You know what I mean? It seems like you want him to go to an offense that maximizes that type of versatility and ability to kind of move him in and out of different spots. Are there specific offenses that you think, like, if Jalen goes here, that's a home run?
Yeah.
If Jalen goes here, maybe that's not where I want him to go.
So that is why these two dudes are my number two, or one and two, because I feel like it doesn't matter where they go.
Okay.
They could go to Tennessee. They could go to Jacksonville. They could go anywhere. And I feel like with what they have, they are going to be instant impact players and go out there and make plays. Like, these are guys that you're going to have packages for. You're going to go out there. You're going to try to get these guys the ball because they have that it factor. And that's why they're my number one and two. Now, with Devontae Smith, I feel that way. Like,
okay.
I feel that he has to get into a certain situation to be able to show everything he has.
What does that situation look like for Devontae Smith?
Well, he's not going to be there by the time the Green Bay Packers pick. He's going to be gone. But that would be a perfect situation, to come into a situation with an unbelievable quarterback, with an unbelievable receiver on the other side of you. There's no pressure on you. You don't have to come out here and be rookie of the year and make all these impact plays right now. We're going to get you into a good system. The quarterback is always going to throw you open, you know, because even though Waddle's coming from Alabama, like I said, Waddle has that stuff you wake up out of the bed with. Really, Devontae Smith has really benefited from being in Alabama. The quarterback has a lot of time to throw the ball. He's able to have a lot more time to get in and out of his breaks and run his routes and things like that and get wide open, you know. So in the NFL, it's not going to be like that. Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, those boys are coming. Your quarterback is not going to have all day to get the ball out. But if he's able to get to a situation where it's another good receiver on the other side, they got a veteran quarterback established that could really make all the throws and throw you open, I think he'll have a lot of success. But he's not one of those guys to me, and always how I rate wide receivers. If you're going to the worst quarterback and worst team, I think we'll be sitting here saying Devontae Smith is a bust. I don't think we'll say that with Ja'Marr Chase and Waddle because of what they have waking up out of the bed.
So I don't think this is what you're saying, but I could read it this way. So help me clarify here. You are putting him in a situation where essentially if he went to Green Bay, for instance, then he's the two. Not that like we have to number everybody. Clearly Devontae is a solid number one wide receiver. Are you saying that you see Devontae having more success in an offense where he can be the two and he doesn't have to be the main guy who draws that defensive coverage that comes along with being the one and all that kind of stuff? Or is he a number one in the NFL if it's also the right situation?
I think when it's all said and done, he can be a number one wide receiver. But coming out in his first couple years in a draft, I think it's better off for him to be a number two. Now, for me, I feel like Ja'Marr Chase and Waddle, right when they walk into the building, they're the number ones, depending who's on their team, where they go. Let's find a way to get these guys the ball. How many times can we get these guys the ball in the game? But I think Devontae Smith, if he could get to a situation, you know, and have another good guy on the other side of him, and he could be a number two, and he eventually might make enough plays, you know, kind of like a Calvin Ridley. You had the Julio over there, but Calvin Ridley has showed you over the years that, hey, I'm a bona fide number one, too. I think Devontae Smith can develop into that, but not off of his rookie year, especially if he goes to a bad situation. And it's crazy that we're talking about this because in Napa, me and Jordy were having a conversation, and Jordy said, JJ, I don't know if you feel this way, but he said, if I would have went to another situation, if say the Washington football team really loved me, if I would have went to Washington out of K-State, he said, I would not have had the career that I've had with the Green Bay Packers. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't have all these touchdowns and all these yards, even though I think I'm good, but I just don't have that, my quarterback not being that good, you know, and I got to go out here and be the bona fide number one and you know, make a bunch of plays and make a bunch of tough catches. He said, I didn't have that. He said, I was blessed to get into a very good situation with a very good quarterback, come up with a bunch of good veteran receivers, and then I was able to learn the game, and then I was able to have the career I have. And I kind of feel when I watch Devontae Smith that he has to go into a good situation to be able to have a successful career. And like Jordy, he was a bona fide number one receiver as the years went down the line, and I could see that being the same for him.
So I want to know how you answered that when Jordy said, I don't know if you feel this way.
I said, no, Jordy, I was a bona fide number one.
Send me anywhere and it would have worked.
No, I agreed with them because I tell anybody and everybody that I talk to, I'm like, over my career, I was truly blessed. You know, like I come out as a rookie out of San Jose State and my quarterback is Brett Favre. Brett Favre can make any and every throw still right now in Mississippi.
Right.
You know, I said, then I move on from Brett Favre and I have the three-time MVP, Aaron Rodgers, who can throw the ball to anybody and make that player better. And I said, then I leave the Packers and I go to a kid in Derek Carr who can really throw the football, you know? So I'm like, I have been truly, truly blessed. And we have been in there, like me and Jordy talked about, we have been in there with the Scott Tolzien's and the Seneca Wallace. And we come out of football games like, dang, I have 15 yards. Like, it's different. So I definitely agree. And like I said, I feel like Ja'Marr Chase and Waddle are definitely two different players. And me and Jordy, like I said, they have stuff that you cannot teach. And that's why I compare them to the Randall Cobbs and the Keenan Allens.
Okay, so those are your 1, 2, and 3. Now, this is where it gets interesting for me, is your 4 and 5. Yep. Because, you know, a lot of people have Kadarius Toney or Elijah Moore. Your 4 is Rashad Bateman from Minnesota. What about Rashad Bateman do you like enough to put him there?
So those last two that I got on there. And
oh, we'll get to 5. Okay, yeah. Let's leave that as a separate one because number 5 is way out of left field.
And I think a lot of people get caught up in the numbers. You know, how fast is he? How strong is he? He is a football player. And what I mean by that is everybody's like, James, how do you have 80-yard touchdowns and 70-yard touchdowns? How do you catch a slant and go to the house and all that? And you not the fastest. You were labeled slow coming out. I said, because I am a football player. I know how to run routes. I know how to get open. I know how to break tackles. I know how to zigzag when I'm in open field. I am a football player. And that is that football IQ and being a football player, that's another thing that is really, really tough to teach. When you turn the tape on, he's getting in there. He's doing the dirty work. He is blocking, you know, and not a lot of receivers like to get in there and get dirty and block. And he's a football player. Anything you ask him to do watching the tape, he's able. He knows how to run routes. He makes a bunch of big plays. And when you watch him, he is a football player.
Okay, so that's for number 4. You're number 5. Yeah. Austin Watkins Jr. Just for reference, for people who are not following this process as closely as you are, so I'm looking at the Athletics rankings, right, of wide receivers right now. They have Austin Watkins Jr. graded out as a 6th-round pick. And the 31st best wide receiver in this year's class. That's just one opinion, but it's so different from your opinion. Yeah. So what do you see in this guy that you put him up so high in your rankings?
So I always mess with Bucky Brooks, you know, because coming out of the draft, I was the 132nd ranked wide receiver, Lindsay.
What? Right?
So 2 days before the combine, my agent calls me and he says, JJ, meet me at the airport. You've been invited to the combine. All right, pack some underwear. I got a sweatsuit for you. Meet me here. I went to the combine, Lens, the 132nd ranked wide receiver, right? So as I get there, my roommate is Johnny Lee Higgins, right? Former UTEP receiver, ended up going 4th round to the Raiders. And Johnny Lee Higgins, when I got there, he keeps leaving the room. He's going back and forth to the room, right? And I'm like, dude, where are you going? He said, I got meetings. I'm meeting with these teams.
He's doing the car wash.
Yeah, and I said, how do you know that you have meetings? And he said, it's on the back of your badge. So I said, I looked on the back of my badge, and it was one team. It was the Atlanta Falcons. It was one team. It was the Atlanta Falcons. So that was, he had about 30 six teams on the back of his thing. He had separate meetings with position coaches and all this. So I'm like, dang, that's why he back and forth. So I look back at my badge, Atlanta Falcons. I'm like, all right, they don't believe in me. They don't believe in me. So I'm like, all right. So I went out. I broke the record at the time for the bench press. I did it 22 times until Greg Little came and did it. Then I go out to the field drills and I do my 40. I run a 4.5. And as I get out there running the routes, you know, in my group, it's 25 wide receivers in each group. I'm number 25 in my group. The coach says, after I run my first route, he says, Jones, come up here and show the guys how to run that route again. And after that, I led the whole drills and routes. I said, this is what I've been waiting for. You know, so after the combine, I moved all the way up from 132 to 32. And after my pro day, my agent was like, don't do anything at the pro day. I said, I'm doing everything at my pro day because I'm showing them that this is me. More. You know, this is not no fluke. I did everything. I did the bench press 22 times again, ran 4.5 again, did the field drills. And I ended up moving up to 16. And I was the 32nd. And I was the 13th wideout taken. Right. So with all that being said, that story, you know, it only takes one team to believe in you. The Packers believed in me. But back to Austin Watkins Jr. When you turn the tape on and you watch Austin Watkins Jr., I don't know if you heard of a guy named Anquan Boldin.
Yeah, I think I've heard of him. Yeah.
This dude has Anquan Boldin written all over him. I mean, from the build to making the tough catches to having the explosive catches to breaking tackles, this dude is every bit of Anquan Boldin. He's super strong. He's super explosive. When it's all said and done, they're going to be looking back at J.J. List like, he called Austin Watkins Jr. being a baller and one of the sleepers in this draft. But this dude, I'm telling you, and I broke down a lot of film on him because I knew when I said his name and I was going to put him this high, everybody was going to be like, what in the world is he talking about or thinking? But if you put his tape on and you really watch this kid, it's not too many receivers that you are going to say his tape looks better than his, and I'm going to take him over Austin Watkins.
So Austin Watkins is also one of the bigger receivers in this year's class. I feel like there's sort of a trend as I go through this.
Go ahead.
I'm going to read you some of the weaknesses. This is from The Athletic's The Beast. It's like their research notes on everybody, okay? So Jamar Chase, the first thing listed as weakness, only adequate height/length. Jalen Waddle, smallish target with unimpressive size measurables. Devontae Smith, unimpressive body type. Kadarius Toney, average frame with lean muscle build. Elijah Moore lacks ideal height, length for the position. These are the top wide receivers in this year's class. Are wide receivers getting smaller? Are we going more in that type of a direction?
No, I truly feel it's just, you know, about, you know, whatever draft class you're in, you know, because you still got a bunch of big boys out there that's playing the wide receiver position. Yeah, we don't have the Calvin Johnsons and all that, but DeAndre Hopkins has size. You still got your Julio Joneses, you know, you still got your AJ Greens and guys like that who have size. But I just think the guys that's coming out this year and a lot of the guys that came out last year, yeah, they're on a smaller tie. They 185 area and all that stuff. But I truly don't see the game changing. I just think that's the way it's been going. But you know.
But does it say something about the game that guys that are that size can be looked at in the way that they are right now, where you turn on the tape and that's not a disqualifier? It's like these are the best wide receivers coming out this year.
I truly believe you just got to go back to the tape. Like, I'm not a big guy in measurables. You know, I don't really care if you're, you know, you have the Julio Jones measurables and you're like, man, this dude is the next best thing come Jesus. He has all this type stuff. I watch the tape. I don't care if you're 185. If you got a big corner on you and they say this dude is strong, fast, and explosive and he can't guard you, hey, that's the name of the game. So I try to, when I'm watching film and all that type stuff, I try to eliminate all that and just watch the football player. and see what he's doing right, see what he's doing wrong, and watch the football player. And with these guys' size, they play big. Like, you watch Waddle, I mean, this dude is over the middle. He's taking hits. He's breaking tackles. He's making plays. You know, you get Ja'Marr Chase getting the number one corner a lot of the times, and JoJo Burrow was still dealing him the ball. He's still making these tough catches, like I spoke of with his body control. He's going over the middle, making these catches, catching slants, going to the house, hitches going to the house. So it really don't matter your size if you're going out there making plays. A lot of people think Davante Adams is on the bigger side, you know, because how tough he plays and, you know, physical he plays, you know. But, you know, Devontae's not one of the bigger ones. He just plays hard. He plays physical. He plays violent. And he goes out there and makes plays.
Let's go back to your top five for a second. And I'm going to tweak the title of the category. It's not your top five wide receivers anymore. Now I'm looking for your top five pass catchers. Do you have a new number one?
No.
Is this the loyalty to the position talking? No. Or no, you would still put Jalen Waddle over Kyle Pitts?
Yes, I'm putting Jalen Waddle over Kyle Pitts just because, like I keep saying, it's God-given, you know. And not saying Pitts doesn't have God-given ability, but Jalen Waddle, like I said, just the stop and go, the sudden change, the ability to be able to play really all five of the positions, because like I said, you could put him in the backfield as well and have him make some plays. I just feel like this dude is special and is going to be special. With Pitts, I mean, he's definitely my number two. I would definitely put him in front of Chase. This dude is, I mean, he's absolutely special. You know what I mean? Like, he reminds me of JerMichael Finley before JerMichael Finley got hurt. And if you talk to anybody in that locker room, JerMichael Finley was a tight end and a wide receiver body, you know. And you talk to Aaron Rodgers, you talk to Jordy Nelson, you talk to Charles Woodson. If JerMichael Finley doesn't get hurt, we possibly looking at him and saying he was one of the baddest to ever do it. You know what I mean? Like, I see Travis Kelce and I see Darren Waller and these guys, and I'm like, they still don't have what J. Mike had.
Really?
They don't. And not just because he was on the Packers, just because real recognized real lens. And as receivers, we were like, why is this dude on our team? Because
those balls should be coming to me.
They're taking me off the field to put this guy on the outside to run routes like he's a receiver. And that is what I truly feel about Pitts. Like,
yeah.
Some receivers are going to be very mad that he comes to their team because he is going to be playing on the outside. He's going to be in the trenches, and he's just one of those guys that could change this game and affect this game. And he's going to be a mismatch problem every single time. That's why we did a little mock draft, and everybody's saying the Falcons need to take a quarterback. I said, if Pitts is there,
yeah,
there's no way you could pass on him.
Well, Pitts will be there at four, and then that just makes it so tricky, right? Like, I'm in the same place as you because I have been thinking about it. So if I think Fields goes three to the Niners, and I realize that could be – or even if it's Mac, right? Even if Mac Jones goes three, then it
– See, you know me, Lance. You know I always think outside the box, you know.
What?
I truly feel, deep down in my heart, and right. I know it sounds crazy, the Niners have Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
I truly feel that the Niners is finna get Pitts to go on the other side.
But they've said they're gonna take a quarterback. Like, that's the only thing that they're being transparent about.
I understand. It's a lot of bluffing and all that stuff that goes on. And I just don't, I don't know. Like I said, I look at the game different. I don't feel like Justin Fields is going to come in and be a better quarterback than Jimmy Garoppolo if Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy. You know what I mean? I just don't. But I do know that you just put all that money on that O-line. And I do know you got Kittle over there. And I do know you have my brother out of Arizona State over there, Brandon Ayuk, who can make a bunch of plays. You add this dude in the mix. Good luck stopping the 49ers with all the schemes and all the things that Kyle Shanahan does.
Well, I like it. I love that.
Flip the draft upside down.
I've filed that away. And if they do that, then all of the props to James Jones. I just don't see them doing that because of the things that they've said. They've talked, and I don't think it makes sense to smoke screen us that dramatically at number three.
My two favorite quarterbacks, like everybody else, is Trevor Lawrence and Zach.
Okay.
And I truly feel anybody else after that, I don't know.
They're not worth the trade, like what they gave up to go up to three.
Yes, I don't know if they're worth that high of a pick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, like, I could see the 49ers drafting one of those guys high and still going into the season starting Jimmy G.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody be looking like, yeah, this is the future and all that type of stuff. This might be Jimmy G's last year, but why if we're trying to win now? And the Niners are built to win now. So you get a guy like that, you know. And I understand what they said. You know, we want a quarterback. We're going to take a quarterback. But a lot of things could change in these two weeks before this draft.
Okay, so let's say that scenario doesn't play out that way, that the Niners don't take him. And then, I mean, and I also don't think that this scenario would play out. But let's just, for the sake of argument, right? You're the Dolphins. You're sitting at six. If the Falcons take a quarterback and the Bengals go O-line – and then all of a sudden you're sitting there at six and you have your choice of all of the pass catchers. You could go wide receiver or you could go Pitts. What do you do?
Oh man. See, now you're about to have me lying to the whole world, because as much as I'm a Waddle fan,
you're not taking him.
I'm running my pick in, and it's Pitts.
Right.
Yes. And it's Pitts just because like I said, man, he's, you know, number one, he's going to be working the middle. That's a quarterback's best friend first, you know, tight end, big tight end over the middle. Number two, you're going to move him on the outside. He's just a mismatch problem. You can't put a safety on him. You can't put a backer on him. If you zone coverage them, that's what you want for your quarterback, because now your quarterback could just go through his reads through the zone and make the throws. But, you know, all that talk, I done said Waddle's the best. I still do believe. But if Pitts is sitting there for the Dolphins, I think that is going to better suit Tua.
Yeah. Oh, I almost feel like in some of these situations, like obviously you want your pick, right?
Yeah.
But the pick becomes easier if the tough choices are taken off the board, just from a fan standpoint. 100. You're like, okay, but if Pitts is gone, then it makes it so much easier. And then they could take like Chase or whatever. And then they're like, we love this. That's amazing. That's the wide receiver we were looking for. And it just feels smooth, right?
And that's the thing with the Dolphins. The Dolphins have two, right? They have like 20 something too.
Oh yeah, no, I think they're 18.
Yeah, so,
yeah, so
my thing is another guy that's like Pitts is not going to be there at 18.
No.
At least you get Pitts and you're looking at 18 like, okay, Smith or Waddle or Chase or Bailey or Austin Watkins can be here at 18.
Totally.
You know what I mean? So you could get that. But
that's kind of my argument for the Bengals too. I have multiple arguments for the Bengals, right? Like, yeah. I really want them to take Sewell at five and shore up that offensive line, because I think that, my opinion, doesn't matter what kind of wide receivers you have there if Burrow doesn't have time to get the ball out, to get the ball to them. And so their wide receivers aren't going to blow you away right now as currently constructed. But like, if you get a good offensive line and you give them lots of time, then they're fine. I think that they're 100%. Fine. The draft is so deep. I mean, you went in the third round. I think it's much easier to find a wide receiver who can turn into something that's more than you expected when you drafted them than it is to find a starting left tackle. Yeah. Like, those starting left tackles, they're all first-round draft picks, and it's 100%. For a reason, because there's a massive drop-off. They're hard to find.
And you got to understand, too, your quarterback is coming off of ACL surgery. So confidence-wise – You gotta show him that, dude, you're protected. You know, you're not running for your life no more. You're protected. You don't got to worry about getting out of there and worry about, you know, getting hurt again. So I definitely think for the Bengals, that's the first place you need to go. You have to protect the franchise. And it might take 1 or 2 years, whatever, but you have to protect the franchise. Number two, if you look at their team right now, you have two solid ones on your roster already. You know what I'm saying? You got T. Higgins and you got Boyd on your roster already. So Jamar Chase or Waddle is just a bonus to the receiver room. But you want to be able to protect the franchise. You know,
okay, I'm glad we're on the same page there. I wasn't sure if you were going to like bang the table for a wide receiver, just, you know, out of loyalty or something like that. So,
protect the franchise, because I'm with you, Linz. You don't have time. It don't matter how fast I'm getting open and all that. If you can't block Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack and Cam Jordan and them, boy, we ain't got no chance to throw it.
Well, speaking of which, your Packers, they have 10 draft picks. The first pick is at the end of the first round, number 29. There are a bunch of different directions that you could go in here. Offensive line is definitely one of them. What are you prioritizing? Wide receiver. Oh my gosh, we've been like banging the table to get a wide receiver on the other side of Devontae Adams for a while here. Where do you think they should prioritize that first round pick?
As much as I want to say wide receiver, I don't think it's going to be a wide receiver. You have Devontae Adams. They have a couple of the young guys that they're high on. You get Devin Funchess back, who you did not have an opportunity to see how he was going to look with Aaron Rodgers. You brought him back. So I think the Packers believe that they are good at the quarterback. I mean, at the receiver position.
Well, let's hope they believe they're good at the quarterback position.
Now, with all that being said, you lost arguably the best center in football.
Yeah.
And Corey Linsley to the Chargers. So if it's anything that we can do to that pick, knowing that Aaron Rodgers is getting up there in age and he wants to play, we just said about JoJo Burrow, protect the franchise. You know, we seen how they lost that game, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, no Bakhtiari. You know, they had their way getting after Aaron Rodgers. So you got Bot coming back. You got a real good offensive line. You just need a center. I don't know off the top of my head who the best center is, but whoever the best center is, if he's available, I would say start with the center position so you know that Aaron Rodgers is taken care of, because you still want to run the ball too. You brought back Aaron Jones. You want to run the ball. You know, I think they believe in Funchess and the young guys. I don't see them drafting a receiver at number one. And number two, you know, I don't think it's going to be any receivers, you know, down there that late that is just going to – we saying, oh, you have to take him. Come in, bona fide, you know, number two on the other side of Tay to a game changer. I think you could get out of Funchess and Lazar is what you're going to get out of the guy you drafted in the first round. So
I would take a flyer later.
I would go center. And then, like you said, I'm in the third round, Jordy in the second round, Devontae second round, Randall second round. Go get you a guy late, second, third rounds, and come in there and plug in, and hopefully he could turn into a good receiver.
All right. Would Aaron be happy with that? Do you feel like they need to make Aaron happy with their draft picks this year after what happened last year and all the stuff that seems to be going on there?
As long as they don't take another first-round quarterback, I think so.
They have a surplus right now. Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do with the guy they took last year.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. But, I think he'll be happy with that, because I think that's really – I know everybody goes through receivers because, you know, those are the guys that get all the fame and all that type of stuff, quarterback, receiver, running back. But I'm sure he'll be good knowing that, all right, y'all let the best center in the game walk away, but at least you got me a good one in the draft, a first-rounder that could come in there and hopefully fill this spot.
James Jones, you're the best.
Thank you.
Go watch The Last Night, okay? We've got – this is the end of the Aaron Rodgers Jeopardy run.
Oh, I'm going to make sure. I'm going to make sure. Jordy, I got 77 bottles of wine, so I'll make sure I get me a glass of wine and watch this one.
Yes. Stay sober, you know, like don't drink all 77 as through it. Although that would be very good. Actually, I take that back. Drink all the wine and then live tweet the episode.
You know what I mean? Oh, no. But I'm definitely going to text him and say, hey, crack a joke on one of the contestants tonight, man.
Well, it's not live.
I know it ain't live. James. I know he recorded a while.
This happened several weeks ago.
I know. So. I wish it was live, too.
You're awesome. Right, I appreciate your time, bud.
If you need me, let me know.
Take care. So that's James Jones. Not the easiest person to find on Twitter, by the way. If you put his name into the search engine, which you should, actually you shouldn't, because you'd have to scroll through a bunch of James Joneses before you get to his actual handle. So I will tell you a different way to get there, and that's just plug in the actual handle. It's 89Jones, NTAF, which stands for Never Think About Failure, which, as we learned in his wine country conversation with Jordy, he doesn't. Would have been a stud anywhere. Anyway, thank you for listening, and we'll be back at it again on Tuesday. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you then.